But we may not look at you, and we probably won't call on you during the question time either, just so you know. What we've been asked to do in this hour, most of which will be opportunity for Vicky and me to share, followed though by a question time, is to share about our journey. I've just called it our journey so far. And I want to begin. There's a scene, you know, I love Genesis. It's got so much great material in it, part of it because it's a long book. And there's more. I mean, Philemon's great too, but Philemon's a dinky little 25 verses. Genesis is 50 chapters. But the end of Genesis, when Joseph is reconciled with his brothers, the end of Genesis when Jacob finally comes up to Egypt and even meets Pharaoh. And he blesses Pharaoh, which is a very incredible scene, because you think Pharaoh, the most powerful man on the earth, he'd be the one giving the blessing to old Jacob. But Jacob actually, he blesses Pharaoh. And when Joseph, who, as we know, is the right-hand guy of the Pharaoh, when he presents his father to the Egyptian leader, there's an exchange of words. And I'd like to just read a bit from Genesis 47, verse 7. And this will be the old MacDonald version. No, I'm kidding. It'll be the New American Standard version. Then Joseph brought his father Jacob and presented him to Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, "How many years have you lived?" So Jacob said to Pharaoh, "Well, the years of my sojourning," and you know, sojourn is not a journey, it's more a stay. It's emphasizing that his time on the earth is just temporary. "But the years of my sojourning are 130. Few and unpleasant have been the years of my life, nor have they attained the years that my fathers lived during the days of their sojourning." And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from his presence. How's your life? "Well, not that great. Not that long, just 130 years. You know, because how many of you would like to live 130 years, all things being equal? Sure, you don't have to put your hand up, we know. You know." And then he said they've been few and unpleasant. And we know why his life was unpleasant. I mean, he just had a hard time accepting God's grace. He got a taste of his own medicine. He married two wives. There was all that rivalry, that bitterness, and it just went on and on. It wasn't a happy life. But at the end of it, at least everyone's living or not starving, and he's able to bless Pharaoh, which just for that one moment was actually worth it, for the leader of the future Jewish nation to bless the Egyptian leader. He reflects back on his life. When we look back on our journeys, will we say, "Oh, my years have been very few and really rough. It's been a hard go." Or we say, "No, it's actually been pretty good. The ups have been much more encouraging than the downs." Yeah. Everyone has downs and ups. Or maybe we say, "It's been wonderful. The first 3 months have been absolutely wonderful, and God bless you." But when you look back on your journey, on your life and your spiritual life, what do you see? Vicky and I want to share a little bit about our journey. And I think as we look back, not on 130 years, more like 30, they've not been few and unpleasant, but we have seen a lot of things. How many years have your journey been? How many years have your spiritual journey been? I mean, and I don't mean when were you baptized, but when did you really start to seek God? When did you get on the track? How long has it been that you've been trying to figure this out? How many of you, it's been at least 10 years that you've really been searching? And I don't mean you're not a Christian. 10 years or more? 20 years or more? 5 years or more? Okay. I was baptized in 1977. My wife was baptized in 1983. I'm not looking at the notes to remember that. That's just to keep me on time. I remember those things. We were both met when we were university students. We were both met through cold contact evangelism. Someone contacts you and he's very cold towards you, and you say, "I'll come anyway." No, that's not it. It sounds terrible, doesn't it? A knock on my door. I had been at university 24 hours, and two brothers knocked on my door. Vicky, it wasn't her first year, it was her final year, and someone knocked on her door. And we're grateful for that, for those people who took a chance who we didn't know them from Adam. And God worked through that. We were both met and invited in relatively new ministries. For me, the Crossroads Church, which was a church in Florida, it's like the grandmother church of our movement, you could say, started a ministry at a place called North Carolina State University. After a time, they started a new ministry at a school called Duke University. The first man baptized there was a fellow named Gary. I was the first person he studied with who was baptized. So it was a very small group. I didn't join it because it was impressively large. In Vicky's case, and this is the beginning of 83, when she was invited, or door knocked, as we could say, but it sounds like someone slammed the door on your head. I was door knocked. Yes, I regained consciousness. But the London ministry was very young. Our team had come. We were two Brits, six Americans. James Lloyd came. He got here June 14th. I got here June 15th, 1982. Douglas Arthur came 2 weeks later. But in 83, we were not an impressive group, at least by the numbers. I mean, Michael was baptized a few weeks into it. It was I was going to say October, but it was... September 10th. You know the date. Well, we were all there. Michael was only 3 years old. It was amazing. But London was a fairly new ministry. We were married in a London church. We were the first marriage. Malcolm and Penny Cox were a week later. Vicky and I are soon starting our 25th year. We have three children, two cats and one dog. And just to be clear, she's British and I'm American. I know you probably didn't catch that. So I've been part of churches in North Carolina, two churches in North Carolina. I've been part of a church in Boston, London. And then together we've been part of a church in London, in Birmingham, in Sydney, Australia, Stockholm, several years, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., and then again, London, and again, Washington, and again, Sydney, Cincinnati, Athens, Georgia, and we've been members of a church in Atlanta, Georgia, for the last 4 years. Atlanta, Georgia, if you're not geographically aware, that's in the southeast part of the country. It's right above Florida, where I was born. This means we're somewhere in the middle of our journey. It's nowhere near as long as Jacob's journey, but the Jacoby's journey, we hope, will be productive. It'll be fruitful in some ways. We share with you a little bit. Vicky first, and then I'll share some things, and then in the final part, we'll take some questions from you.
Just to start out, I wanted to share, because I know, and I appreciate so many of you being praying for me. I know last October, November, I got very sick and we didn't know what had happened. And the long and short of it is I was driving home and for some reason I became completely incapacitated and I lost my eighth cranial nerve, which is what affects my hearing on my right side and my balance. And so since that time, I live in a world as if I'm under the influence of drink. So you have to excuse me. I may veer off here. I'm trying to keep my mind together. But I'm sort of really learning and getting rehabilitated. I've made tremendous amount of progress. I couldn't stand. I couldn't even drive a car. And to be back in England driving a manual car, I see as a huge victory because 8 months ago, Doug was literally carrying me into the doctor's surgery. So I thank you for your prayers. The hearing loss is permanent. The balance and equilibrium, the other ear is learning to cope, and I just need prayers that I can be gracious during this process because it's driving me crazy at times. But, I'm just so grateful. We didn't know whether I had a brain tumor, had I had a stroke, whether I'd had a series of fits. I mean, you just don't know what happens, but it makes you look at your life very differently when literally the rug gets taken out from underneath you. And those of you who know me, I've always been extremely independent, and I think God has been teaching me a lesson, and this was a big one. I felt like I went from 47 to 77 in 30 minutes, and I'm much more understanding of what it's like for the elderly to attend our worship services now because I'm one of them. But that's really the first significant health challenge I've really ever faced. But it really makes you think about your journey and what's important when, if you lose an eye or you lose, one of your faculties, it's incredible what an impact it has on your whole life. So I thank you for your prayers. I'm not drunk and disorderly, although I may come across that way at times. But I think for me, some of the things that I started to really notice and shape my life was when we lived in Sweden. And I think we got to a time when we were looking, it was when we sort of started to introduce the idea or concept of family groups, and we realized that if you were in some form of leadership, your leadership was going to be an extension of your own natural family. And I think that's when we first started to realize how significant your upbringing is in the way you're going to lead. And I think we've really continued. This is back in the late 80s, but I think since that time, when I look at my own life and then I looked at other leaders and their lives and how they grew up, if we grew up in a dysfunctional family, which I think all of us to some extent have had dysfunctional families, it's really going to affect our style of leadership. And I think it made us realize that leadership, spiritual leadership, is not natural, but I think so many of us just had that A-type character, and we were going to do something, and off we went, and we presumed, and I presumed for a long time, that that was spiritual. And I think as I've looked back over my life, I've realized it was very humanistic. And I think growing up, those of us who grow up in England, we don't grow up with a foundation of faith. I never went to church as a child. I got religious when I was 16 and then was converted when I was 21. And so when anything ever gets tough in my life, I go back to the way I was brought up, and probably you do. And that's what I had to realize, that a lot of what I had learned growing up was really my default setting as a spiritual leader. And as I look back through the years, I realized I was very humanistic because I had good common sense. And that's, maybe that's a gift, but it's not a spiritual quality necessarily, but we can confuse those things. And for me, I think, probably things I share, I look back and think, what are some of the things that I really made a mistake? And I feel that when I worked for the church for was 18 years, and in the end, I was so concerned, I wanted everyone to be happy. And I shared a lot of this in my discussions and my classes on the Book of Ruth. But that's what I realized, is that happiness isn't really a spiritual quality. It's having joy in the Lord. And when I look back and say, what is the one thing I regret the most, is that I always wanted all the women to be happy. And so I would